Hey, good morning and welcome again. If you're here with us at Camp St. Croix or watching online, I am really glad that you could be a part of the beginning of this brand new message series. If you really are new to MidCurrent, let me extend a very special welcome to you. We're really glad you could be with us. And you did pick a really great day as we are beginning this brand new message series called The Weary World Rejoices. We are headed into a season of the year that is often referred to as the most what kind of year? Somebody can tell me. The most what? Wonderful, right? We are right now heading into the season of the year that is considered the most wonderful time of the year. Now, I'm just going to go out on a little bit of a limb here and suggest that I'm not sure that maybe everybody would describe this time of year as wonderful, right? I'm not sure that that is the adjective that we would use to describe what's happening right now. I'm not sure if that's the adjective that we would really use to describe anything that has happened in 2020 for that matter. I could go down the line and I could remind you of everything that has made this year not so wonderful, but I don't think that I need to do that. I don't think I'd need to do that. I don't think you really even at this point want me to remind you of everything that has made this special year all that it is. Instead, let me just suggest to you that a better adjective to describe life right now is weary, right? Not necessarily wonderful. I think the whole world is weary, right? We're all tired. We're tired of arguing, with family and friends about everything possible that there is to argue about. We're discouraged, maybe. We're frustrated. We're fed up. Maybe we're a little depressed if we're really honest with ourselves this time of year. And maybe, just maybe, some of us, maybe you are losing some sense of hope even right now. Believe it or not, this all actually quite well describes the state of things the very first Christmas, right? It wasn't quite like we always make it out to be. And in fact, I love the way that Christian author Philip Yancey talks about the very, very, very first Christmas. Here's what he says. He says, "Christmas cards stress sunny words like love, goodwill, cheer, happiness, and warmth. It's a fine thing," he says, "that we honor a sacred holiday with such homey sentiments. And yet, when I turn to the gospel accounts of the first Christmas, I hear a very different tone and sense mainly disruption at work." Right? In reality, the days leading up to the very first Christmas, in those days, it was not all that jolly and bright. In fact, it was really quite the opposite. I mean, if we get right down to it, it had actually been 400 years since God's people had heard from God. It had been 400 years since God had spoken to his people, okay? That's kind of a long time, 400 years, okay? Most people can't wait like 40 seconds for someone to respond to their text message, right? The silence and the anticipation through each and every second of those 40 seconds, it is agonizing, okay? Now imagine 400 years of silence, nothing, okay? It had been 400 years since God had last spoke to his people through a prophet named Malachi. 400 years, okay? The people were, they were promised a Messiah, someone to come and rescue them from generations of oppression, from generations of defeat, and yet century after century, right? Generation after generation, God was seemingly silent, okay? And their hero that they were promised, that they had put their hope in, their hero never arrived. I don't know about you, but after 400 years, I think I would just assume that God really had gone silent. I mean, after 400 years, maybe more than that, I would just assume that maybe God hadn't really heard my prayers, that God maybe really didn't care about the prayers that I had been praying, okay? And here's a question I want to ask you as we begin. Do you ever feel like that? I mean, does anyone ever feel like that, like God doesn't hear you? God doesn't see you, right? God doesn't care about you. God's not listening to what it is that you are praying about. God isn't hearing what it is that's on your heart. If that's you, right? In a season right now, or in a year right now, or in a few years of your life where you feel like, man, I don't think God is hearing me. If that's you, I'm really glad you're here, because what I want to do today is I want to zoom in even past the unanswered prayers of an entire nation of people. We'll talk about their unanswered prayers, but I want to zoom in even past the unanswered prayers of an entire nation and focus in on the unanswered prayers of two people, just like you and me. These two people, they were living very faithful lives in the midst of generations of deafening silence from God, okay? And in the midst of their silence, in their own personal life, in the midst of the silence in their kind of national life, and in the midst of silence in their own personal life with God too, okay? They lived a faithful life. And I really think their story gives you and me plenty of hope and plenty of reason to think that we too might truly rejoice this Christmas. There's a few things about their story that I really want us to pay attention to, because I think we can learn a lot from them. Their story, these two, this couple, their story is told in Luke chapter 1. So many people think that the Christmas story is really Luke chapter 2. If you're thinking, Sten, how would I even know the difference between Luke chapter 1 and Luke chapter 2? Think a Charlie Brown Christmas, okay? When Linus takes the stage and gives his little spiel, that's Luke chapter 2, okay? Shepherds in the field, good tidings, goodwill, good cheer, baby in the manger. That's Luke chapter 2. It's a Christmas story. But I think God really started to make his big announcement at Christmas in Luke chapter 1. And I think it all starts in verse 5. And so that's where I want to begin today. Here's how it starts. It says, when Herod was king of Judea. Okay, when Herod was king of Judea. Now, we're just six words in here, but already I just need to stop for a second to make sure we understand really what exactly that means, because it isn't necessarily all that great. It might seem like nothing at all, but the truth is it really wasn't that great. The fact that Herod was king of Judea is actually all of the more reason why things this first Christmas were not anything close to jolly and bright. Okay, Judea was the land of the Jews, right? It's the name referred to the general kind of land in the nation where the Jews lived, okay? And Herod was appointed king of this region. He was appointed king of Judea by the Roman Empire. He was essentially a puppet king for Rome, okay? And Rome, at this time, the whole Roman Empire was nasty, 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 nasty. Okay. At this time, they were aggressively attempting to take over the entire known world. They had already dominated Israel, and had been taking their land and had been taxing them into poverty, right? And so in exchange for kind of running this whole scheme in Israel, it was Herod who was put into position and then generously compensated to run this little scheme by the Roman emperor. Okay, so Herod was kind of just picked for this job. Needless to say, he was no man of the people, okay? He was really just kind of an all-around bad dude. In fact, I'll just give you a few little details here just to fill in some context, right? He actually had his own family killed because he didn't trust them. Okay, here's another one. 5 days before he knew that he was going to die, he rounded up and arrested a group of very well-respected citizens, and he commanded that they be executed on the day that he was going to die so that there would be kind of an attitude of sadness across the whole nation at the time of his death. Okay, and this is the dude that who found out from the wise men that Jesus has been born. Herod is the guy. If you keep reading the Christmas story, Herod is the guy that ordered that all firstborn babies in Jerusalem would be killed, hoping that he too would take out Jesus, this newborn king who was a big time threat to who he was. Okay, so you know, these first six words to me, they just add to the backdrop. That's why I'm kind of pulling them apart a little bit. They just add to the backdrop of this very first Christmas. Okay, God was silent, that the people had prayed for their coming king, and yet they were stuck with Herod. Okay, this little detail, I think, just makes this story and makes God's big announcement here all the better. So let's keep reading into this story. Here's what it says. When Herod was king of Judea, there was a Jewish priest named Zechariah. He was a member of the priestly order of Abijah, and his wife, Elizabeth was also from the priestly line of Aaron. Zechariah and Elizabeth were righteous in God's eyes, careful to obey all of the Lord's commands and regulations. Okay, so what this is saying to me is that they were faithful, observant Jewish people, faithful, observant Jewish men and women. Their own names were proof of that. Zechariah actually means faithful, and Elizabeth means covenant or promise. And living up to the meaning of their names would be really, really significant because of what we find out about them next. Here's verse 7. They had no children, Zechariah and Elizabeth. They had no children because Elizabeth was unable to conceive, and they were both very old. Okay, this statement is a loaded one. Okay, they had no kids, and they were getting old, aka their childbearing days. Even if it was possible, their childbearing days were over. This was actually a really big deal in that day. Here's why. The reality is for them that there's disappointment, but it was more than just disappointment of the dashed dreams of being a mom and a dad. It was more than that. Okay, being unable to conceive and having no children in that day, long ago, it meant public shame and it meant public embarrassment. They lived in a culture then that concluded that childlessness was a result of like divine punishment or some kind of spiritual defectiveness. Okay, that is not true. If you're wondering, hey, is that really how things work? That is not true. But that was the belief in the day and the time and the culture where they lived. Okay, but here's the good news about this. God was about to make a major, major announcement to the world and to Zechariah and Elizabeth. And he chose, I think we'll see here, he chose a remarkable time in the life of Zechariah specifically. He chose a remarkable time to do so, to make this announcement. It's a moment that I do not believe was a coincidence, and a moment that I really, really, really want us to pay attention to. So let's keep reading. Here's verse 8. It says, one day, Zechariah was serving God in the temple, for his order was on duty that week. And as was the custom of the priests, he was chosen by lot to enter the sanctuary of the Lord to burn incense. Here's what you need to know about all this. Zechariah was a member, it says, of the division or the order of Abijah. He was actually the member of one of 24 different divisions or 24 different orders of priests. In total, get this, in total, he was one of 18,000 different priests who rotated time serving at the temple. One of 18,000 priests. And all of these priests, they served 2 one-week periods at the temple every year. Okay, so he's on one of his kind of two-week shifts. And at this specific moment, he was chosen by lot, which is essentially kind of a spiritual, name drawing out of the hat in this day, okay? So he was chosen by lot to carry out these special duties, to enter the inner sanctuary, the Holy of Holies, to carry out his sacrificial duties there. Now, you got to get this about this whole chosen by lot thing, okay? 18,000 priests, 24 divisions, okay? 2 weeks, 1 week period, two times a year. And a priest then, one of these 18,000 priests, they were only selected by lot, by this spiritual kind of name drawing. They were only selected for this specific role in the inner sanctuary, only selected once in their lifetime. 18,000 priests, each one only was selected for this specific duty once in his lifetime. So it is at this moment, okay, during one of his two shifts at the temple, during his once in a lifetime, kind of random selection drawings, it's at this moment that God chooses to show up in a divine way to make an announcement that we're going to see in just a second here. Okay, but what this says to me, that this is the moment when God shows up, what that says to me is this, that God's timing is really good. That's something that I want us to understand in the midst of maybe some prayers that we're praying right now that maybe feel like God isn't answering. God's timing is good. And I don't just mean like good, I mean like really good. God's timing is perfect. God's timing is intentional when he acts and when he moves in our lives. I want you to see this. This is the moment that he chooses. It's in his goodness that God chooses this one moment in the career of Zechariah to make a very divine move, to make a huge announcement. Who knows? Maybe it's these kinds of moments when God knows he's going to have our attention the most. And maybe this was the case for Zechariah. Here's what happens next. That his one time, he's selected for this. Here's what happens. Verse 10. While the incense was being burned, a great crowd stood outside praying. And while Zechariah was in the sanctuary, an angel of the Lord appeared to him standing to the right of the incense altar. And Zechariah was shaken and overwhelmed with fear when he saw him. Okay, today, when we think of angels, we think of them as like cute, you know, cheerful, chubby little babies with wings and little golden halos, okay? But when you look through the pages of the Bible, you know, when people encountered angels, they freaked out. I mean, they fall down to the ground, they're terrified, they put their head down, they cover their heads. They are terrified. And I think that's exactly why the angel responded like he did. Here's verse 12. It says, "But the angel said, 'Do not be afraid, Zechariah. God has heard your prayer.'" Do not be afraid, Zechariah. God has heard your prayer. Okay? The question is, maybe that Zechariah is wondering really is, what prayer? What prayer is it that God has heard? The prayer that I just prayed, you know, here in the temple, right? The prayer that I've been praying for the people outside, maybe my prayer for someone, for anyone other than Herod, maybe my prayer for the, you know, the Bethlehem Broncos to win the big game later that afternoon, right? Zechariah's probably going like, what prayer could it be that God has heard? It was none of those prayers. It was the other prayer that I got to imagine that Zechariah and his wife had prayed over and over and over again. The prayer that they had prayed most likely many times for years with a broken heart and with tears in their eyes each time. I'm thinking it's the prayer that he most likely assumed that God would have never answered. The prayer that he assumed maybe God had forgotten about. The prayer for a child, okay? And so the angel came to announce, no, Zechariah, God has heard that prayer. And here's the good news. The angel delivers this message. Your wife, Elizabeth, will give you a son, and you are to name him John. And you will have great joy and gladness, and many will rejoice at his birth, for he will be great in the eyes of the Lord, okay? That's not all. Okay, the good news for Zechariah and Elizabeth will translate into good news for everyone, okay? The promised child to them answers two prayers at the very same time, for a child in the house of Zechariah and for God's redemptive work to begin in the life of an entire nation. God's answer to their prayer is actually going to point to God's answer to the prayers of an entire nation of people, the prayer for a Messiah. Skip to verse 17. The angel goes on. He will prepare the people, your child, who you're supposed to call John, he will prepare the people for the coming of the Lord. Okay, John, we later know as John the Baptist, okay, he was given the assignment to go before Jesus, to point people to Jesus, to prepare people, to prepare hearts, to begin turning hearts for the arrival of Jesus. Okay? Zechariah and Elizabeth had prayed for a child, and really God sent them a prophet. So much more than they could have ever imagined. Okay? In the midst of their pain, they prayed and felt like God hadn't heard them. And I think you and I can probably relate. Okay? Your pain today, it may not necessarily be the absence of a child, but each of us is all too familiar, I think, with a very long list of things that may have brought disappointment into our lives. And if this is the case, here's the one truth that I'm hoping that we hear. Here's the one truth that I'm choosing to believe as I read this story, that sometimes we are deprived of something good because God has prepared for us something better. Okay? Sometimes we are deprived of something good because God has prepared for each of us something better. They had prayed and prayed and prayed for a child, and God sent them a prophet. And not only that, but he tapped this prophet with the assignment of leading the way, of pointing to the coming Messiah. Okay. Now if all this seems too far-fetched for you, I think Zechariah felt the same way, because here's how he responds to this remarkable bit of news for him and his wife and for their people. Here's how he responds. Verse 18, Zechariah said to the angel, "How can I be sure this will happen? I'm an old man now, and my wife is also well along in her years." Translation, me and the missus are old, okay? And old people don't have babies, okay? I think if he could say what he was really feeling, he would have said to the angel, "Man, you're crazy. I mean, there's no way. I mean, it's not possible. I know you're an angel, and I know you're really spiritual and everything, and I know you hang out with God up in heaven all the time, but down here on earth, we have this thing called biology, okay? And my wife and I were well past the window when our biology would allow us, even if it was possible, would allow us to do what it is that you're suggesting is gonna happen, okay?" And it's his disbelief going, "Hey man, how can I really be sure this is gonna happen? I don't think you understand who we really are." I think it's his disbelief that tells me something. It suggests to me that perhaps this was a prayer that he had given up on, prayer for a child. His disbelief going, "No, this can't happen. There's no way. You can't know what you're talking about." His hesitation and his disbelief suggests to me that this was a prayer that he had really just stopped praying, because his time was up, right? He knew it wasn't gonna happen, so why wish for it any longer? Okay, now as a priest, I think Zechariah knew that God could do miracles. He'd probably spent a lot of time praying for people. I can imagine that he, you know, believed that the God of his ancestors, who had worked miracles before, could still work powerfully right now, powerfully in the lives of his people today. But again, his doubt to me suggests that he didn't think God could work this way in his life at this moment. "How can I be sure this is going to happen? You don't understand. My wife and I are too old." His doubt and his disbelief suggests to me that this is a prayer that he had really just stopped praying. And so if I can, mid-current, I want to ask you all a personal question today. What prayer have you stopped praying? Is there something that you used to pray about often, but now you feel like, "Eh, time's up"? Is there a prayer that you used to pray, but now you kind of feel like, "Eh, doesn't matter. The clock has run out," right? We've reached the end of the line. There's no hope, okay? Maybe you used to pray, hey, God, I just wish that he would stop drinking. Maybe you used to pray, "God, I just wish that I could be more faithful to you." Maybe you used to pray, "God, would you heal this relationship? God, would you bring my kids back into the family? God, would you make this depression go away? God, would you make this temptation go away?" Or God, would you fill in the blank? Whatever it is for you, whatever prayer it is that you had been praying. And I think for each of us, for each of you, I think there used to be something that you prayed for, but you stopped. In your mind, there was no way that it could happen. So why even bother? Why keep praying for something that clearly just will not happen? If that's you, I want you to see how the angel responds to Zechariah. I want you to see how the angel responds and what he has to say about how it is that Zechariah can be sure that this is going to happen. Here's verse 19. Then the angel said, "I'm Gabriel." Okay, I like to think that he added a "dude" to the beginning, as if he were insulted by the question, like, "Dude, do you know who I am? I'm Gabriel." He says this, "I stand in the very presence of God. It was he who sent me to bring you this good news." I think that Gabriel is teaching all of us a lesson that we need to remember here. That lesson is this: when we ask how, God reminds us of who. How in the world could this happen, God? That's what he asked the angel. How in the world could this happen? And Gabriel says, "Dude, do you not know who is at work here? Do you not know who it is that sent me?" I mean, Gabriel's telling Zechariah, and I think he's telling me and you, I'm kind of a big deal, okay? I hang out with the big guy, okay? And he dispatched me to you to tell you something. He sent me on his behalf to bring you good news. That's how you can be sure, okay? Because there was good news for an entire nation. And there was good news for a couple who had been given the long-awaited gift of a child, okay? It's good news for them. It's good news for a nation that their child was going to point to something greater, point to the one that they had been praying for, okay? But there was one more piece of good news that I just do not want us to forget this morning, okay? This little piece of good news, it came right before the big announcement. The angel said to Zechariah, "God has heard your prayer." Midcurrent, I think that Christmas, it is the announcement that God hears you. Christmas brings with it the good news that God hears you, that he hears your prayers in the midst of your pain, in the midst of your doubt, in the midst of your discouragement, in the midst of your depression, in the midst of hopelessness. God hears you. God hears your prayers. God maybe even hears the prayers that you stopped praying. God's timing, it may not be your timing, but his timing is good. And sometimes we got to understand that there might be a roadblock to what it is that we have been praying for, but a roadblock is never the end, okay? It's always just a fresh turn, a fresh bend in the road on the journey that God is calling us to. And we've got to continue to be faithful at each step, at each turn, and at each bend along the way. So let me ask you just one more time here this morning. What prayer or what prayers have you stopped praying? Because maybe the one thing that you need to know, that you need to believe, that you need to hold on to this Christmas is that God hears you. God isn't done with you, right? That God has a brand new bend, a brand new turn in the road for you, and it's gonna be way better than what you had wished for on your own. And perhaps it's that bit of good news this Christmas that truly would give you reason to rejoice. Let me pray. God, we do give you thanks for this season that we are in, the season of Advent, which is really a time of hopeful expectation, God, of waiting, preparing our hearts for the incredible gift that your Son, Jesus, is. God, it is such good news that we don't have to somehow work ourselves into heaven, But God, because of how much you loved us, you sent a little bit of heaven down here to earth with us. So God, we give you thanks for your son, Jesus. And God, we give you thanks for this story about the moment in time when you kind of first made your big announcement that help was on the way, that the hero that the people had been waiting for was really headed in their direction. God, we thank you for this announcement that you made. First, about a child named John who would prepare the way for your son, Jesus. And God, we give you thanks for this story and for the reminder that it is to us in the midst of days and weeks and months and years that get long. We give you thanks for the reminder that just like Zechariah, God, you hear our prayers. God, I know some of us, whether it's out loud or whether it's in the quiet of our own room or somewhere else, God, I know that so many of us are praying prayers for you to show up in a powerful way, God, for you to show up again, for you to show up maybe for the first time in our lives. God, I know that so many of us are praying prayers this time of year. God, maybe some of us have been praying the same prayer for years, for something that matters to us, for someone that's important to us, God, for something significant happening in our lives. God, and I know too that sometimes it can feel like you didn't hear, that you didn't care. It can feel like maybe sometimes our prayers just went unanswered, which means maybe you turned your back on us. And God, I pray that this Christmas, each of us would hear and remember and hold on to the good news that you are a God who hears our prayers. And so my hope for each and every one of us, God, is that we would keep on praying and that we would continue to be faithful to you, just like Zechariah and just like Elizabeth. God, that we would continue to be faithful to you, trusting that your timing is good. God, trusting that you may have something really remarkable prepared for us that was beyond what we could have dreamed up on our own. God, would you help us to keep praying the prayers of our hearts, to keep being faithful to you, so that this Christmas there really might be reason to rejoice, to give thanks to you for your son, Jesus. It's in his name that we pray here this morning. Amen. Hey, thanks so much for being here. Thanks so much for joining us online. I hope you have a great rest of your Sunday afternoon. Don't forget to RSVP to let us know when we can expect to see you on Christmas Eve. We hope you have an amazing rest of this day, and we'll see you right back here at 10:30 a.m. for week number 2 in our series, The Weary World Rejoices. Have a great afternoon. God bless you.